Hey, welcome into the Lone Star Playbook. Eric, I'm assuming you want to lead the Texas basketball talk
Yeah,
there.
that's just for Wags and those who care, but you know, it's Lemoyne, so we can keep it moving.
No doubt. Where is Lemoyne? I know you talked about Bianco's from there, and I did see his post on Twitter, but where even is
Oh,
Lemoyne?
I didn't know that Bianco posted about it. Lemoyne is right outside of Syracuse, New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Bianco, I don't know if it was for like a master's program or him applying there out of high school, but he posted basically his rejection letter. And it was old school. He's an older guy. It was a physical copy of paper and not an email. So yeah.
Now, George, I only laugh because Bianco showed up to the game last night and stayed the entire game. He didn't like to show up for like a quarter or like for a half. He showed up, stayed for the entire game. I guess he's from that area, up in like Pennsylvania, where Sean Miller's from. So, you know, he like through 6 degrees of
He
separation knows
said.
the Miller family. So he stayed through presser and was like chopping it up with Sean Miller afterwards. So that's why I got a laugh out of that comment. But yeah.
He said, "This shit's personal, coach. We
Yeah,
got a cover.
it's
Whatever the
personal,
line
dog.
is, we're covering." But yeah. So, all right. Well, hey, let's get right into it. Some big news out of the NFL this morning. Quinn Ewers starting his first ever game of his professional career versus Cincinnati Bengals. Tua turned the ball over, has been benched for turning the ball over. First thing I thought when I saw the Schefter tweet is like, I wonder what Sark thinks about this, because they're both his guys. So I don't know. Sure, he's happy for Quinn. I'm happy for Quinn. Very interested to see what it looks like. Obviously, at all the talent in the world. One of the top-ranked prospects in the history of the recruiting industry out of South Lake Carroll, only spent 3 years at South Lake Carroll, and really only played in about 2.5 seasons due to injuries. So I'm very curious to see what it'll look like. The Bengals are one of the worst teams defensively in the league, but the Dolphins kind of look like it's a dead man walking situation with their head coach as well. So he said in a press conference after the game on Sunday, when asked, could you make a move with the quarterback? He said, anything's on the table. We need to improve. We'll see if they improve with Quinn Ewers at quarterback. So going to be very interested and curious to see how he ends up playing there. But yeah, I'll be honest. I did not watch a single minute of the game last night. I don't even know if it was on TV. What do you think the capacity was in the stands and in the press box?
Oh, and like I said, in the press box for games like that, it's literally me and Thomas Jones. It was me, Thomas Jones. You know what? I'll shout out Jalen Brown. Does a good job covering for OB. Jalen's good dude. And yeah, that was it. And Dave Eckert also came, but like that's four people out of a press area that seats like 30, right? The attendance at tip-off, it was less than 1,000 people, like by far. But if you know anything about Austin, you know, I mean, obviously Jordan knows, but anything about Austin, know anything about getting to Moody Center, it's a late arriving crowd. You know, the way they block off traffic for basketball games really annoys me because they shut off Robert Deadman. So you got a
They
guy
didn't
like,
need to block it off last night, it sounds like.
yeah. I don't know why they do that. They close off Robert Deadman. So you got to kind of go around Dean Keaton to get back up. I ran a light. I got a ticket coming in the mail. I know it's coming out because I ran a light. I was running late to try to get over from like Red River to cross over to Dean Keaton. But I'm saying all that to say, you get like maybe an additional 1,000 people that will come by the time, you know, the first timeout happens. So yeah, I'd say attendance is probably about 2,500 tops out of an arena that seats 11,000 for basketball.
Yeah. Hey, we're not going to go back to Texas and Lemoyne, but
Yeah.
they got one more ball game on the 22nd versus Maryland Eastern Shore, as Wags talked about. And
Yeah.
then they roll into conference play. How are you feeling right now? Is this a tournament team? Is this a first four in, first four out team? Where's kind of your confidence level for where Texas could be in the postseason?
Can you throw up a B-ball Coach Richards comment about Miller's sets?
Yeah, let me find this.
Okay. Listen, I am no basketball expert, all right? I will say this, having covered basketball for the past 5, 6 years at various levels. You can say what you want about Sean's sets. If Sean Miller's sets are from the 1990s and Rodney Terry's sets are from the 1940s, It's plain and simple, because that was everyone clear out, give the ball to Trey. That was the, you know, Jordan's a little too young for this reference. That was the, hey, everyone pass the ball to Will, okay, from the Fresh Prince. Like, everyone clear out, pass the ball to Will, let him shoot. So I hear what you're saying, and I understand that you could look at that offense. I disagree to an extent. And maybe I'm just biased because I've looked at what basketball was last year under Rodney Terry. I think they do a solid job of getting Matis, you know, the lane of leaving the lane clear for Matis. I think it was very silly, and that's why it only lasted 4 minutes to try and play Matis and Lesina Traore together. Like, there's that. But to answer your question, Jordan, to go back to your question, right now, like I said with Wags, I think this is a team that is going to hover between 8 and 10 in conference play, and ideally 10 and 8. For those who aren't familiar, if you're 500 in the SEC or, you know, a big time league, that can usually get you in. Anything less than that, you're kind of like on the bubble, right? As he pulls up the schedule here. Yes, we can kind of run this thing down. Mississippi, the SEC, man, damn near every game is going to be a toss up. You know, Mississippi State, Texas should win that, but it's a toss up. That 3-game stretch, Jordan, is brutal, right? You got going to Tennessee, almost at UT. Apologies. You're going to Tennessee. You're going to Bama. You're going to Vandy, or Vandy comes to Austin. You got to hope to get one of those. Texas A&M is a cluster right now with Buzz leaving. I think you got to beat A&M twice. Kentucky, not looking like the Kentucky you know. Like Mark,
what's going on up there? I mean, I know their fans are going to be pissed if they're not undefeated, but like, is there actually a chance he can get fired after this year? Like, no. Are they doing that bad?
I don't think after this year, because Mark Pope's a really good coach, right? And they haven't had any issues recruiting. They just can't play worth a damn right now. That's really what it is. Like, they just look out of sorts, especially in non-conference play, right? That's the thing that's so kind of mind-boggling for UK fans. I may actually go to this Georgia game on the 24th, just because Georgia's playing really good basketball right now, and you know it's not a hard place to get to, relatively speaking, for SEC venues, as Georgia knows. So you hope to get that one. Auburn, I think that's a toss-up game. I'm not sold on Bruce Pearl's kid. I'm not even really sold on that team. They lost a couple guys. OU, South Carolina need to be wins. You got the Chris Beard return game. That'd be, you know, circular calendar there, right? The rest of these games, Mizzou, Dennis Gates, they're going to be solid. That's a toss-up game. LSU, you have to win. Matt McMahon could be fired at the end of this year. Georgia, Florida, again, you hope to split. So, yeah, I mean, if you count them, I think I counted off about 8 games just there that I think Texas either you hope to win or they should win. So I see them more or less about 8 and 10 or 9 and 9, ideally, in conference play. 9 and 9 will get you in. 8 and 10 will have you on the bubble / me headed to Dayton again, Jordan.
Yeah. Hey, I'm looking at that January 24th game versus Georgia. The last 2 years, Texas has held their junior day. Well, they always hold it on a Saturday because school's back in session by the end of January, but they've tried to hold it on a Saturday that lines up with the Texas home basketball game. And then, you know, they do junior day stuff and get to take the players or the recruits over to the game and get to watch the ball game. And it also doesn't take up any seats or anything from like normal spectators, because they stick them like up in the sky in the rafters where there's like standing room only. And I totally forget who it was. But I think it would have been the January 2024 junior day. Texas hit a buzzer beater to win the game. And vibes are pretty high from all the recruits coming out of it, because it was a great game. I couldn't even tell you who hit the shot or who they played.
24, that should have been Tyrese Hunter Baylor, if memory serves me correct.
Yeah, I think you are correct. It was Tyrese Hunter. I don't know if it's Baylor, but it was Tyrese Hunter. I know that. So, I don't know. Maybe the Georgia Dogs and their Georgia Dogs versus Texas for the junior day. I want to ask you what you think of this. The oldest and youngest players in Division I men's basketball. For those who can't tell, there is a freshman who is my age. He's 23 years old. There is a sophomore who is 29, 28, somewhere 20, around there.
20, yeah, 20, 29. Yeah.
Got an FIU Panther on there from 99. Is this – he's not related to Akeem,
no,
is it?
No, no, okay. No relation. No relation.
I figured not. We got a South Florida Bull, Devin Hade, another 99 kid, and then a fifth year from Oakland, a 98 kid. Saw a video of God, what's his name? Arkansas's coach used to be at Kentucky.
Calipari.
Calipari, yeah. This talking about like, hey, no one's recruiting freshmen anymore. It's all transfers. So how does this affect basketball long term? Because if everyone's taking transfers, that means there's like 60% of a freshman class than there used to be. So how does it work 3-4 years down the road? Like, is this going to offset it where one random recruiting class, there's going to be like 140% more kids in a recruiting class than there should be? And not like in one school's class, but like in a graduating recruiting cycle, I should say. I'm very curious to see how that goes. I don't know if you have any thoughts on this. I know it's kind of plagued everyone in college basketball, just a bunch of unks and old heads playing what is called college basketball.
Jordan, that comment by Nathan just answered basically your question. It's they're taking G League and Euro pros now. So what a lot of – that's why Sean has really leaned into the European recruiting, signing Declan Duru, right? Now, Declan's is 18. Like, Declan's actually a young man who played for Real Madrid. Their, you know, youth team, their under-18 team, and now is 18 as a freshman. But Texas just faced Virginia. And they had a kid – who literally went through the pre-draft process with Indiana, with the Pacers, decided to, instead of going pro, go to college. He's a 22-year-old freshman, probably one of the better freshmen in the ACC, right? That's how they're going to offset it. You may sign one or two from high school, but you'll just offset it with guys from the G League or offset it with guys from EuroLeague, and then you'll pump up your class to get, you know, 4, 5, 6 guys and then hit the portal. But this is insane. Like, I look at the dude who's the oldest fifth-year player, right, and Brett White, who is born 2/17/98, all right? So let's do the math. He's a fifth-year player, which means, in theory, he started around that COVID year, right, 2020, 2021. He's 7 years younger than me. I'm born in 1991, and I graduated college a damn near a decade ago. Like, actually, a decade ago, right? That math doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, this freshman, Tomislav Boljan, I hope I said his name right, he was born 3 months before I was. I didn't go to college, but if I did, I would have graduated in May of 2025, and this kid is a freshman in college at 23.
And also, not for anything, I want to say this so, you know, this falls on me. Jordan gets no blowback from this. That dude was a sophomore. He looked like he's about 40. That dude looks like he's forged papers. That dude looks like he has multiple kids.
Have you seen – I don't even know the dude's name, and I know this has happened a few times around the country. Like, when some guy forges his papers and he's like a 28-year-old averaging 20-something in high school until people find out.
Right, right.
Some Chad Powers stuff. By the way, started watching Chad Powers last night. Pretty funny. Oh, I like it. Yeah. It's not too serious. The girlfriend watched it, Glenn Powell's in it. You know, she likes that part. But it is pretty funny. And there's a lot of like references. Like, I can't believe I'm about to say this. So the plot of the show is this former college quarterback who's really good but had a lot of off the field shit that never let him have a chance at the pros or anything. 8 years after his college career ends, he gets an idea that he's going to disguise himself and like wear like these special masks and makeup, and he goes by a different name. And he's playing at a made-up school called South Georgia. I'm only 4 episodes in, but they played Ole Miss and Tennessee, so I assume they're like in the SEC, hypothetically. But because he's wearing this makeup and mask stuff, like he can't like shower in the locker room or in front of his teammates because it's going to come off. And he has to, you know, play things very safe because his mask can't come off. He's a very recognizable person of who he actually is. And The coach, the head coach, walks up to Malakum and he's like, "Man, why aren't you taking a shower?" And he's like, "Oh, I can't." And he, you know, makes up some excuse for why he can't take showers. And he's like, "I want to be in there." And he's like, "I know you want to be in there, coach." He's like, "No, I can't." He's like, "I know you do, but, you know, Sandusky, you're not allowed to." And it's like, Jesus Christ.
Oh,
you know?
Wow. I just caught that.
Yeah, but it is funny. And it's also interesting. Peyton Manning and Eli Manning are like executive producers on it. Eli Manning has a cameo whenever they play Ole Miss. He's like an Ole Miss coach. But apparently the idea of the show or plot of the show came from, I think it was Eli's thing called, like, I know Peyton's ESPN series is like Peyton's Places, but Eli's is something similar like that. But he pretty much dressed up and disguised himself and went to a practice, and they're like, "Hey, it's this walk-on tryout." And it's Eli Manning, so he's throwing, you know, heaters and zingers and some good passes, and everyone's like, "Who is this?" And he eventually takes off his disguise. And years later, they turn that idea into a full-fledged TV show, and that's what Chad Powers is. But I like it. It's not serious at all. You can, you know, look on your phone for 20 minutes and not pay attention and still know what's going on. And it's on Hulu. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Jordan, you might be a little too young. Some people in the audience might get this. I need to check it out because I'm hoping it's kind of like Blue Mountain State vibes, you know, maybe not like as over the top, but when you made,
it's not nearly as over the top.
Okay. Okay. Cause when you made the reference to, you know, that former Penn State defensive coordinator, I was like, "Oh, okay. That's that's in that realm."
No, I never liked Blue Mountain State. I mean, I haven't tried to watch it in years, but I got in like 1.5 episodes. I'm like, "This shit is so stupid." not watching this.
Now, granted, to be clear, right? This is like when I'm in college, it's just peak 2 a.m. coming back from the bar. Like, you know, you're not in your right mind. I'll put you that way. Yeah. It's classic entertainment for that.
Oh, yeah. All right, we're going to hit on some of these comments. Antoine said, "Patience needs to be given to young pass catchers, DeAndre Moore, JT Sanders, Gunnar Helm, and Justin Jefferson. At zero catches is true freshman." This is a good point. But on the flip side of this, DeAndre Moore is the only one of these guys that was really a freshman in the NIL era. It's different. Roster churn is a real thing. Go look at Texas's 2023 class. It was a top five class, I think the number three class in the nation. The one with Arch Manning, Anthony Hill, Jonte Cook, Baxter. Half those guys are gone. And, I mean, you look at the position units of some of the first classes of the Sark era. Alex January is the only D lineman Bo Davis signed that is going to finish his career at Texas. The only one. And he signed like 11. You look at the linebacker class. Texas signed five linebackers in 2023. The only one who's going to finish his career at Texas is Anthony Hill. Leonglafau, portal. Samaje Burrell, portal. Tasilia Kana, portal. Darian Gallette, portal. Like, I mean, you know, a lot of these guys going in the portal from Texas are expected. The only one that wasn't was Leonglafau. I explained it yesterday. It was a money situation. BYU came in with an offer. He said, "Hey, Texas, can you match, exceed it?" They said, "No, that's too much for a linebacker. We like you. You started 23 games in a row. Played in all 42 since the start of the 2023 season, but at the end of the day, we can't pay you this. It doesn't make sense." And that's part of the game. Texas has been on the opposite end of this situation and been BYU in the situation 10 times an offseason. That's how it works, right? But roster churn is a real thing. You have to understand, like, the way this works in recruiting, stars and rankings is what determines the floor of negotiations. That is what determines the starting point for negotiations for redshirt contracts, NIL. And, you know, if you're a five-star, even though you haven't played, and it might be a situation like Khalik Lockett where he didn't play at all as a true freshman, you still have to pay him close to $1 million because someone else will. And you still have to pay him close to $1 million as a freshman and pay even more than that to keep him next year because someone else will pay that. It's part of the game. And over time, you have to make decisions like the Leonglafau decision whenever other schools come in. And it's ultimately up to the kid or up to Texas to match. They can't match it for everyone, and they're not going to match it for everyone. But as it goes on, and you only have so many scholarship spots, especially when it was under 85, now it's moving to 105, You have to cut the fat every year and cut the dead weight. In 2022, they shed a few guys after year one, even more after year two, even more after year three. And I do think of the 22 class, so it's somewhere between like only 8 and 10 of them are finishing their career as Texas Longhorns. And it's because, like, for what you're paying those guys, if they're there and still can't contribute by year three or year four, you're wasting money. And yeah, you're wasting money with the freshman class that sits on the bench, but you still have to pay those guys. So everyone all in college football is always talking about how young the rosters are. And the rosters are young because all the old guys that don't play are getting cut because they're wasting money. So, like, Texas going forward, until there's a CBA or something in effect that there's more regulation with college football, every top program is going to have the bulk of their roster in year one and year two, because the only guys in year three, year four, and year five that are left on the team are guys in the 2D. Because if they're not, then you're wasting money. So, I don't know. I think that's interesting. You make a great point, Antoine. I do think all four of the receivers they signed in 25, Khalik Lockett, Jamie French, Dale McCutcheon, Michael Terry, can all be successful, and patience is required. But, you know, I do think a few of those guys are making more than the players that had a higher snap count at the position in front of them. And I don't know how that gets managed in the locker room. I mean, I think Texas is pretty successful with keeping everyone on the same page and keeping the numbers out of conversations in the locker room. But it's part of the game. You have to pay a premium for talent out of high school. And if you don't, and those guys go somewhere else, they're almost twice as expensive to tamper with and get them out of their situation into the portal and on your team. So,
Jordan, can I ask you a quick question? Can you throw up Antoine? Yeah. Throw up Antoine's comment just real quick. I 1,000% agree with Antoine. It's a great point, right? I'm asking Jordan because he's probably more equipped to know this specifically than I am. DeAndre Moore, JT Sanders, Gunnar Helm. I mean, maybe you won't know Justin Jefferson, but speak to the best of your knowledge. The players, the true freshmen on this year's roster, all of them are making more than those four players listed, correct?
What these guys made as freshmen or their final years of college?
No. But what they made, I'll rephrase the question. These true freshmen that are on the roster now, their first year NIL package is more than what those guys had as first year players.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay.
I mean, so how
does that affect patients? I think that's, I agree 1,000% agree with Antoine, but I think that's the variable that you can't like account for is like, yo, you almost can't have patience when financially it was a different investment then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So patience from the front office and boosters, you know, big money donors, it is important. And I think it definitely is still there. Now, the more and more you pay these guys, the less patience there's going to be because you're paying them more. And, you know, the next year you have to pay a bunch of guys who won't play even more. Like, the market is ridiculous. I brought this up before. When Colin Simmons committed to Texas in August of 2023, I talked to someone in his camp that helped negotiate with Texas, SMU, LSU, and Miami. SMU actually offered more money than anyone else did, but he didn't want to go to SMU. Texas offered the second most. Texas's deal for him as a freshman, when he committed, they were going to pay him $375,000 as a freshman, which was a shit ton back then. Number one edge in the country, you got to pay a big penny for it, and they did. That was in the 2024 class. And don't get it twisted. I do think that 375 number probably went up to about 400 or 450 by the time he actually got on campus. But you got a true freshman, Sean Alexander, you know, of the year award winner out of him. You got however many sacks he had as a freshman out of him. He made a bigger impact than almost any freshman defensive player in the country that year. But in 2025, the following recruiting cycle, like, I know of like at least four or five guys that were getting seven figures year one this season that didn't even combine to make half the impact Colin Simmons did in year one. But that's the market. That's the way it's gone. It's gone like this. It continues to go like this. So it's so hard to manage it, you know, and you have to have a dialed in front office and personnel staff that can take shots and hit on these shots. You look at Texas's class, a lot of schools are starting to do this too. There are pretty much two groups in every top-tier blue blood recruiting class. It's the pay close to seven figures. They can make an impact year one and have legitimate day one or day two NFL upside. And those guys all probably go at least 400K a pop, at least. After that, you have the three stars, the low end of the class, the developmental upside guys. Well, you're not paying them more than 150, 200. And if you are, you're dumb as hell. Because most of those guys are a year away from being a year away, and they can't even contribute on special teams until year two, and in the two deep or three deep till year three. And the good thing is you're not paying them that much. So if they don't develop or hit or pan out, you can cut them and put them in the portal after a year or two. And if they do hit, guess what? You have tremendous value because the starting negotiation, what they made as a freshman, as a sophomore, pales in comparison to what you had to pay, you know, a five-star at that position. So the game has changed. It's ever-changing, and it'll continue to change. But the craziest thing I just think about is how Colin Simmons made around 400K year one. And nowadays, like, I mean, you can't get a five-star edge rusher unless you're going to pay him like 1.4 year one. It's nuts. It's nuts how it's gone. I don't know how boosters, big money donors, GMs, front office people deal with this because it drives me crazy as someone that covers it. I mean, yeah, that's kind of what I got there. Antoine with another one. What do you what do you think about the 2026 running back Jack Pitchford from Liberty Hill who committed to TCU? Yeah, I hit up someone at TCU about this. He's a PWO. I don't know how much he'll play, but he was getting offers from like Air Force and Colorado School of Mines. So he is a PWO, but was the district MVP. So shout out to him. Also, thoughts on TCU signing 21 in-state recruits in a 22-man class? Yeah, the only kid they didn't is a JUCO kid from Corsicana, but he's originally from Georgia. Kind of an interesting story. Small-town Georgia kid, played both ways, went to Georgia Tech as a linebacker, left after 1 year in the portal, went JUCO. And he is now the number – where is this? He is now – to do the number two JUCO tight end in the country, number 36 overall prospect, Nakari Ashley. But the rest of this class, I like it a lot. Their two top ranked kids are my nephews, Carter Buck, Jason Bradford out of Temple and Lake Travis. I do think both are going to contribute year one, probably not start, but will contribute. This Amante Martin kid rocks. This is Cam Martin's little brother, by the way, and the cousin of Jamal Charles. This Zachary Taylor kid, I know how he looks on the hoof, but tested better than almost anyone at Under Armour Houston. I mean, he ran a blazing 40. He also hit like 10.48 in 100 meter. This Vincent Johnson Jr. kid is a kid Kyle Flood liked a lot early on, but they never offered him. And then Jesse Ford, kind of I don't know really how to describe him without it coming off as a diss, but not the most talented guy, but he's tested well and is one of those guys that plays with his hair on fire. So, like, he can definitely make something out of that. This Camille Pruitt kid, they flipped him from somewhere, I'm not sure. But he ran, like, the second or third fastest 40 at Under Armour Dallas and went, like, 4.43, 6.1, 165. I think he can be a draft guy one day. Really good ball skills, consistently wins at the catch point. Just a dog out of East Arlington. Asen Theus has been a key cog in Duncanville's receiving corps for years. Obviously, everyone talks about DeCorian Moore, Zach Turner, and now Trent Yancey. But, I mean, Theus has been a three-year starter, has been incredibly consistent, and a really good get for TCU because, I mean, if this kid was at any other school besides Duncanville, he would have had, like, 3 years in a row of 1,000 yards receiving. Tests well, a little undersized, but plays above listed size and could be a good slot. This Jack Dalton kid, I've seen him play. Another one that on the hoof, it'll seem crazy, but this kid has gone sub-11. He's tested really well. Not really a dual threat, but an athletic pocket passer and an efficient chains mover. I mean, I saw him play Willis this year. I've seen the Woodland several times throughout his career. He can be something. James Scott, this kid's kind of a receiver, tight end tweener, 6'5", 215. And then Javori Graham. Cool story here. He's partially deaf, so his voice, you know, sounds kind of interesting, but has been a huge part of a turnaround at San Antonio Harlan, led them back-to-back years to the deepest they've ever gone in the playoffs, I believe second and third round, and really got San Antonio Harlan jumping. And then Brock King, another Port Arthur Memorial kid. Texas offered this kid, but, you know, was always kind of lower on the board. Really sticky man corner. He's just 5'9", 178. So his recruitment started to become more and more limited as, you know, people realized he wasn't growing because he was a kid that popped on the scene really early. And then Noriel Dominguez, Pac-Man, 6'2", 225. Super, super, super productive player. The only thing is he's tested horribly, but really productive, true Mike backer. And, I mean, if they can get some athleticism out of him, they'll have a lot of value there. And then two Austin area kids, Cooper Reed out of Dripping Springs, Maddox Flint out of Westlake. Cooper Reed, they flipped him from Arizona State. Really good X receiver who is another guy that can consistently win at the catch point. And then Flint, I'll be honest, I don't know much to say about him. I haven't seen him that much at Westlake. And Braden Bach, I know this kid's agent, a tremendous deal by the agent, by the way. This kid's getting paid more than most of their class, to my knowledge. I don't know, could be a solid tight end. He chose TCU over Kansas and Kansas State. So, I like their class a lot. I like the fact that 21 of the 22 kids are high school kids from the state of Texas. While I do think TCU and Sonny Dykes and their staff have made a few bad personnel decisions, this is a really good class they have coming in and, should have a lot of success with those cats. But we had to talk about it at some point. Eric's favorite Floridian, Warren Sapp, called Texas high school football fake football. Not only did he do that, he did it talking or in the comment section of a post that was shitting on DeSoto running backs Rod Baker, who has rushed for like 1,200 yards in 5 playoff games and like 20 touchdowns. Colorado just offered this kid 2 days ago. The day after they offer him, Warren Sapp is in the comments section of a post downplaying Sherrod Baker's playoff run, saying Texas is fake football. Any thoughts here? I know Warren Sapp is just your favorite.
All right. Where do I start? CB, I'm also going to hit on your comment. I saw you said, what did Stark have to say at a Citrus Bowl availability yesterday? That was not a public availability. I knew he went because obviously I saw Bianco at the game yesterday, but I'm trying to find a video of that, CB, if possible. So I'll circle back, if not today, on tomorrow's show. But as to Warren Sapp, this is what Warren Sapp is. You know, listen, Texas high school football fans have all the reason in the world to be like, shut the F up. I'm just telling you right now, for those who are not familiar with Warren Sapp, you're talking to someone who grew up with Warren Sapp's ascension to be like the great Hall of Famer that he is. Anyone roughly like, I guess a little older than me, has a story of Warren Sapp being a complete jerk, right? Like Warren Sapp legit would get tickets driving down Dale Mabry Highway, which is one of the main highways in Tampa, heading to the stadium, get tickets, legit throw them, crumble up, throw them at the cop and be like, yo, here's $500. Like, that's who we're talking about. Anything comes out of this dude's mouth, you can't take it seriously. I have said on this show, okay, obviously I love Florida high school football. In terms of atmosphere, not even close. You take a look at those, you know, 1,500 people in the stands at Pitbull Stadium for a high school championship game compared to what you'd have at AT&T, right? There's that. Just to say, like, this is why, Jordan, I'm trying to actually make a coherent point instead of just rambling. I understand Deion Sanders hiring guys like Marshall Faulk and Warren Sapp and went on the staff, right? And I'm not comparing Marshall Faulk to Warren Sapp, but this is really what you want as representative of your program. Forget what you may think of Texas high school football. Forget the fact that you're, and listen, Sapp's big, like Florida, because he's, for those who don't know, he's from right outside of Orlando. Went to Apopka High. It's a school I'm sure Jordan's heard of. You know, Apopka puts players in you know, big time D1 programs. Doug, you're trying to recruit for a college program. You just offered kids from Texas. What? So yeah, thoughts on that? Just complete idiocy. Why I wouldn't want him representing a college program. Sapp is great to represent himself, but it's stuff like this why I would have never employed a guy like this. And just to be completely transparent, again, who the hell am I to tell Warren Sapp what you can and can't do about coaching defensive line, right? I clearly am no one in that regard. However, it's hard for me to buy into the idea, Jordan, that Sapp is the best teacher of defensive line skills as much as a guy with tremendous God-given ability that made him a Hall of Famer. But it's the same reason Michael Jordan was never a coach. I highly doubt LeBron James will ever be a coach. How do you tell dudes like, yo, go do this? And they're like, yo, I'm not you. It's the Austin Reeves thing, right? Remember when LeBron's telling Austin Reeves as a rookie what to do on defense? And he's like, what? Like, his brain can't fathom that. It's the same concept here. So I'll stop rambling, but just nonsense by Sapp. But it's what's expected.
Hey, you might be able to coach better than him. They had a bottom 10 defense in pretty much every metric this season. And also, he didn't sign a single D lineman out of the high school ranks this year. So, elite recruiter as well. Woodcrest said, apparently Texas has made a significant offer to Jaden Waugh. Jabbar Jalouk is also trying to get Jacoby Jackson as well. I think it's kind of one or the other situation regarding Jacoby Jackson. Like, I mean, if Texas ends up getting Jaden Waugh and Jacoby Jackson, it'd be hilarious. I just don't think that's happening. But with Waugh, I mean, yeah, Texas is trying. They're communicating with the agent. Everyone is. Georgia, Ohio State's in it. Several other schools are. He's probably a top five returning running back in the country next year, you know. So I've heard the numbers for what Kwon Lacy's getting offered. They're all in the 1.2 to probably 1.6 range. Jaden Waugh is getting somewhere around that too. And if you're Florida, I do think they're not getting a final answer from Jaden Waugh until the hire is official with the running backs coach job. And I haven't seen anything saying it's official, and I really haven't seen anything besides Chad Scott being the leading candidate, which I think would help the chances of him going in the portal if he does end up being the actual coach. So, yeah, and, you know, with Waugh, like I talked about it earlier this week, Texas is extremely motivated to sign a really good portal class and load up the final year of the Arch era. Jaden Waugh is an example of that if they were to get him. Extremely motivated. And yeah, like Jaden Waugh is the bell of the ball. He's who everyone wants. But if Isaac Brown ends up in the portal, he's really good too. There's going to be several really good backs, and I don't think there's any way Texas doesn't land one of them. They know the need in that room and are willing, slash very ready to pay what that takes to get that player. So I do think if Jaden Waugh doesn't – if he ends up back at Florida – it is less to do with money and more to do. He wants to stay there because Texas and all these schools trying to get him will pretty much pay whatever it takes. So,
Jordan, real quick, just so I can follow up on what CB said. You know, CB said, what did Sark have to say at Super Bowl availability yesterday? CB, just so you know, like with bowl games like this, a lot of times the head coaches will fly into that city and do availability with the local media there that is specific to them. So that looks like, as best as I can see, that was the local TVs in Orlando and the Orlando Sentinel. So it wasn't made public. I saw like some clips came out, but I don't have a full transcript. So just FYI, if there's something that like's notable that comes out, I'll circle back with UT, see if I can get some of it. But I doubt it's gonna be anything noteworthy. I guess he did comment on Arch coming back. So that may be the only thing that's worth talking about tomorrow, Jordan.
Got it. Yeah, Legend Bay. Get out of his paperwork. Eric, do you know what I'm talking about here, Legend Bay? Did you see any of this?
I know the name, but I don't like wholly know the details of the story.
Okay, here's the story. Some great recruiting lore. This story will live on for a few years. Legend Bay is a top 247 athlete at North Forney. He actually has gone to like five different high schools in 4 years. Not really his fault. His mom is crazy. That has been documented at this point. So he commits to Tennessee back in the summer. They're taking him as a receiver. He's been a high school quarterback everywhere he's been, but it's always been clear he's a receiver, you know, at the next level. And Ohio State offered him in May, didn't really push for him, but he had a tremendous senior year. They turned up the heat. They end up getting him to OV in November, and they flip him. He's going to Ohio State. The thing is, his mom wants him at Tennessee and was pissed that he flipped to Ohio State. And the relationship got so heated and so tense, he wanted to go to Ohio State. She wanted him at Tennessee. That before signing day, he wasn't even going home after school anymore. He was living with the coach or on his buddy's couch because his mom in that situation was so crazy. And so much so that one day, like a week before signing day, his mom showed up to the school with an agent trying to talk to her son and get him to sign something, and he did not want to talk to her. And they ended up getting the mom and the agent apparently escorted off campus. So signing day, he has a ceremony in the North Forney gym. Ohio State is everywhere. He's wearing all this Ohio State gear. It's all on the table. He's ready to go there. He's going to sign there. And the mom still wants him at Tennessee. And the coaches were afraid she would show up and make a scene. So they kind of, you know, figured out a plan where if she did show up, they would figure out a way to cool it down or remove her. Now, she did not end up showing up. But the thing is, Ohio State never posted his letter of intent because he's 17 years old. If you're 17, you have to have a guardian or a parent sign it. His mom's is the only parent in the picture, to my understanding. She refused to sign it because she wanted him at Tennessee. So why did she want him at Tennessee so badly, right? That's probably the question everyone's asking. Well, they offered slightly more than Ohio State did, around $100,000 more for year one. And they also, I was told, offered her a house, a car, and a few $100,000 to the mom if he was going to go to Tennessee. A house in Knoxville, a car in Knoxville, and a few $100,000. And that's why she wanted him at Tennessee. Ohio State wasn't going to pay her anything because in most cases, you should not have to pay the parent anything to get the kid. So he disappears after the signing day ceremony, goes home. He's with his mom, and they can't get a hold of him. The coaches at North Forney can't. Coaches at Tennessee or Ohio State can't. And no one knows what the hell is going on. And then Tennessee posts his letter of intent. He signed with Tennessee. And it got to that point because he was so tired of arguing with his mom, dealing with that. And his brother and other family also wanted him at Tennessee for obvious reasons. And so he signed with them just to put an end to it and, you know, get off my back or whatnot. But guess what? He turns 18 on Christmas Eve. When you're 18, you can sign your own paperwork. You don't need a guardian. So he's getting out of his paperwork with Tennessee. They completely understand the situation. They're going to let him out of his paperwork, and he's going to sign with Ohio State. And even if Tennessee didn't let him out of his paperwork, he enrolls in January and just would have gone in the portal. So they really had no choice. And, you know, it's a fucked situation. It's not like they were going to hold him hostage. And also, like, I'm sure Tennessee is probably, you know, bummed they're missing out on the talent, but happy they don't have to deal with all the stuff that comes with having him on the team. So that is the backstory for Legend Bay. He will sign with the Ohio State Buckeyes and not Tennessee. So, yeah, pretty crazy story there. In other news, big coaching change or news yesterday, Frank Wilson, LSU's running backs coach, assistant head coach, and current interim head coach, is going to leave LSU for Ole Miss after LSU plays in the Texas Bowl. I can't remember who they're playing in the Texas Bowl, but I mean, what a hire by Pete Golding. Like, it's kind of funny how Ole Miss and LSU are just like swapping spit right now.
They basically got a trade because Kevin Smith basically, as I had said last week, right, Kevin Smith has been with Lane Kiffin basically his entire career. It seems like Kevin Smith is going to head to Baton Rouge.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. CB said, if Texas gets Jaden Ball, see day one starting running back versus Texas State. Hell yeah. He's got to be. I mean, maybe Trey Wisner is because he's been there longer. But if Jaden Ball's on the team next year, he's the leading rusher at the end of the regular season. He's the leader in snap count at running back, leader in carries, leader in everything. He's a man. And he'll get paid like a man if he does end up at Texas. But, yeah, Joey Austin said, did Texas get a tight end and receivers coach yet? Tight end coach is not something we're watching. Jeff Banks will be back next year unless something unforeseen happens. Receivers coach is something we're watching. Chris Jackson, his contract ends after the bowl game and will be a free agent. Haven't heard anything about Sark or Texas making an effort to re-sign him. Last offseason, he was very interested in getting back to the NFL. However, had a buyout on his contract since he had one more year. NFL teams hate paying buyouts, especially for assistant coaches. So that kind of limited, you know, his ability to leave for the NFL. But now that he doesn't have one and Texas hasn't made an effort to resign him, at least that we've heard of, we are kind of in wait and see mode there. I do think at this point it's probably more likely than not that Texas has a new receivers coach next year. Now, regarding who that could be, I don't know. Holman Wiggins is the name I've definitely thought about in the back of my head, but A&M just announced that he's going to be their offensive coordinator. Right. Very curious to see how that'll work. He's never called plays. He's had a co-OC title at A&M, but so did Klein, who was the actual play caller. Now with Klein gone, they needed to replace him. I don't think they've announced who the quarterback's coach will be since that was Klein's role. But could they hire a QB's coach who has a co-OC title that's actually the play caller? Perhaps. But I do think A&M's move, part of that was to keep Holman Wiggins and make sure he's not leaving College Station anytime soon. After him, I mean, it's hard to think of names for Texas. Cortez Hankton makes some sense. You know, he's got the New Orleans ties, but you also have New Orleans ties to Jabari Jalouk, Baton Rouge ties to Alan Clark. Are you hiring someone just because of where they're from and where they can recruit? It wouldn't make sense to do it like that. It is a great question. I think is it Malcolm Dennis, the USC receivers coach?
Yeah.
I don't think that's his name. I'm close, though. But I think he could be a name to watch. Doubtful on Rashad Samples. He can. Dennis Simmons, that's what it is. I don't know where I got Malcolm Dennis from. But Dennis Simmons could be a name, the USC receivers coach. I think Rashad Samples could. I mean, any open running backs or receivers job at Texas is going to have his name on the hot board. Dennis Simmons and Sark played at BYU together. So there's a connection there. But with Samps, he's been coaching running backs at Oregon. However, played receiver in college, has coached receivers in college. He can coach receivers or running backs. So he could be one to watch.
Oh, my God. Go ahead, Jordan. I'm sorry. I was like, wasn't that a Dennis who was at USC? And it just clicked into who it was. And it's a totally different person. Continue.
You're good. Hey, we got going a few minutes over, but do you have any thoughts on the Biletnikoff? Because I do think if we're really giving it to the best receiver in college football, Jeremiah Smith should have won this 3 years in a row or for the last 2 years and then win it next year. But that's not how it works. But any thoughts on the Heisman Doza or Malachi Lemon winning the Biletnikoff, any other of the awards?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a thought there because I voted for Skylar Bell. I thought Skylar Bell was the best receiver in college football. Jordan obviously will see that one differently. I mean, sure, Jeremiah Smith certainly is the best stud, right? There's no doubt about that. But I thought Skylar Bell.
At Grainger, we're for the ones who pay attention to every little detail, the ones who fuss, tinker, and sweat the small stuff. Because you know the tiniest thing can make the biggest difference when it comes to keeping business moving. We get it. We're the same way. Offering access to product experts to help you quickly and easily find what you need. So whatever your industry, you know you're always getting professional-grade products. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I've said this for a while. I'm tired of the Heisman being just a quarterback award. Like, it annoys me to no end. Yeah, historically, the Heisman has been a quarterback award. But can you at least, can we pretend that we're voting for the best player in college football, right? Not just the best offensive player, not that Davey O'Brien was the best quarterback. With that being said, yeah, of the options, Fernando Mendoza was the best option in my mind. Someone said that a Heisman voter did call out Pavia. Yeah. I didn't see what the uproar was about people who were like, oh, Diego. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, he had a great year. It wasn't a crime that he didn't win the Heisman. He was running around acting like it was a crime that he didn't win the Heisman. But what do you expect from Diego Pavia, right? Like, there's that. So, yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's more astounding to me is someone who was covering, sports in South Florida just 3-4 years ago, the fact that Fernando Mendoza won a Heisman Trophy like that, in itself is, and I'm not crapping on Fernando Mendoza, just stunned that he's gone from, this gangly kid, Christopher Columbus to was that camping at FIU, or I should say the camp that runs at FIU. To be clear, I crap on FIU a lot in terms of them being a college football power. I say that in air quotes, but because it's actually in Miami, you get a lot of studs who go through that FIU camp and a lot of big time schools who hit that camp. But just the fact that he went from there to Heisman is stunning to me. But yeah, I thought he was, it wasn't an egregious choice, but yeah.
know, one thing I think about a lot with guys like Mendoza is like, he was committed to Yale. But if he ends up at Yale and Cal doesn't swoop in at the last minute, like, do we even know who he is? Because it's highly doubtful he develops the same way. And even if he does, he's portaling out of Yale. How many big-time Ivy League transfers have there ever been? He probably would have to go somewhere G5. And then how successful would he have been at G5? Like, the butterfly effects of just G5 recruiting, Ivy League recruiting, and these late flips are so fascinating. Is Florida State and Mike Norvell, are they in the same spot if Travis Hunter never flips?
Like, people forget that. It's real.
Like, Florida State, year to year, has one of the craziest decommitment lists you'll ever see. Like, they average 10 dudes a year, and, like, you look up at those lists in 4 or 5 years, and, like, half of them are draft picks. And it's just crazy what could have been thinking with them. I could not imagine being a Florida State fan right now. Like, they're so broke they can't fire him, and there's no confidence in that situation at all. And they've been so close to hiring coaches, and then they get offers elsewhere, and they've taken it every single time. It's happened to them on, like, 4 different position coaches this offseason. So, I don't know. Kind of an interesting fact here. Per our source, Joey Austin, the first time in Heisman history, a running back did not win the Heisman in a year ending with 5. Kind of interesting. But, Eric, anything else you want to close it out with?
No, man, I'm all good. I'm off to start writing about players I think the Longhorns should target in the portal. A little offensive line help. Keep an eye out for that. Going to do a little offensive line help, a little running back help, maybe a little linebacker help. So it'll be out this week. Horns247.com, O-line starting today.
Curious, how are you doing this? Are you only using, like, names of players that have announced intentions, or are you –
No,
like, hey, Texas should tamper with this guy.
Nah, you know, obviously, Jordan, you had all the reason to be out over the weekend, but we kind of started down that road, basically, like, hey, here are players who we think either Texas could convince to get in the portal and come to Texas, or ones that are in the portal. So that's how we're doing. I mean, I'm not going to go crazy, like, oh yeah, I should get Jeremiah Smith, right? Like, that's obvious. Everyone should get Jeremiah Smith, right? That's like, that's nonsensical. We're trying at least players that you think in theory Texas could sway, but they don't have to be in the portal currently.
Yeah, if Jeremiah Smith, Ryan Williams, and Cam Coleman aren't the first 3 receivers, then
right,
I'm to unsubscribe. So I don't know. But hey, up next, this week's edition of the Horns 24/7 flagship podcast with your Eric Henry and Chip Brown. We're going to end the stream, but it'll be back at 2 p.m. with Chip Brown and Zay Collier, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, wherever you get your live stream. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in today. Leave a like, comment, subscribe, and we'll see you tomorrow. Peace.